vice presidential visit. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we'll tell you how a visit from VP Kamala Harris highlights food insecurity here on the First Coast. An update on vaccinations, too. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, A World Distanced. We'll preview the new production at FSCJ that captures this extraordinary time we're all living through. Speaking of which, here are the latest numbers on coronavirus in Florida. Unfortunately, Florida recently became the first state in the nation to cross 1,000 cases of that highly contagious UK coronavirus variant. Data from the CDC shows the state had 1,040 cases of the B.1.1.7 variant as of yesterday. Now, at the same time, FEMA announced that the four federally supported vaccination sites around the state in Jacksonville, Orlando, Tampa, and Miami will be able to administer 500 of the first doses of the Pfizer vaccine every day, beginning tomorrow through April 7th. Previously, the state had said that they would only be able to give out second dose shots during that time frame. And here's another reminder. Everyone 50 and older is now eligible to go get the coronavirus vaccine all across Florida. Some states, like Orlando and Miami, have leaped ahead of the governor. They're vaccinating everyone 40 and up. Some cities, I should say. If you are 40 and up and you want to drive down to Orlando, for example, to get the shot, you could do that this week. Now, amidst all of this, Vice President Kamala Harris stopped in Jacksonville yesterday. She stopped by this city's FEMA vaccination site at the Gateway Town Center, and she also stopped by Feeding Northeast Florida, where the VP took part in a local roundtable about food insecurity. We've got an update right now as we welcome Susan King, President and CEO of Feeding Northeast Florida. Hi, Susan.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you. Also on the line, City Council Member Joyce Morgan, who serves on the Council's Food Desert Committee. Council Member Morgan, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. And good morning, Susan. Good to talk to you again.
You too.
All right. And the number to join us, everyone, is 549-2937. 549-2937 as we talk vaccines, food insecurity, the American Rescue Plan that the VP was here to talk about, and more. Give us a call, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. You know, yesterday, both you, Susan, and Joyce, you both took part in this roundtable along with some other state and local officials. Let's begin with the public official on the line, Councilwoman Joyce Morgan. Kamala Harris came here to tout what the White House is calling their Help Is Here tour, with the theme of helping to put food on the table, which is a critical issue right now. Can you highlight some of the points that were touched on yesterday?
Thank you, Melissa. First of all, let me just say that just being in the presence of the Vice President was an amazing feeling. She, to me, made everyone feel welcome and totally engaged. And so I really appreciated that. And I did whisper to her that I was her sorority sister. So I just have to get that out.
All right. Right, right. That's big time.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But she talked about the American Rescue Plan. Help Is Here, helping to put food on the table, as you said. And she just talked about expanding access to the pandemic EBT program, extending a 15% SNAP increase through September of this year, in investing in more into the WIC program, some $880 million. And it was truly about what was going on in our community and each one of us. School Superintendent Diana Green, Councilmember Garrett Dennis, and Congressman Al Lawson joined Susan and myself. And we just really got to share with her what's going on and how we feel we might be able to get assistance from the federal government. And Commissioner Nikki Fried was our moderator. So I just felt like it was a great afternoon.
Okay. What are your thoughts about Governor Ron DeSantis refusing or declining an invitation to appear? Mayor Lenny Curry, a Republican, did appear at this bipartisan event. The governor instead chose to go to the opening of a Buc-ee's in Daytona Beach.
Well, what can you say? I think that is where we're missing the mark. Being in a food desert is a bipartisan issue. It's about everyone. And it's about the same people that Governor DeSantis serves. We all serve people. And that was why I was glad I was there, because I got to dispel the myth that in District 1, we don't have food deserts. Yes, we do. That's one of the main reasons I wanted to serve last year on the City Council's Food Desert Subcommittee, because I recognize that no matter where you live, there can be a food desert when you can't get fresh fruits, vegetables, other foods. And there are just pockets all through Jacksonville. And those are the same people that this governor serves, just like the mayor and just like me. So we're all in this together, or we should be, I believe.
Well, Susan King, CEO of Feeding Northeast Florida, as you well know, there are more than 300,000 food insecure people in our area, 1 in 4 kids, 1 in 6 adults. You distribute 30 million pounds of food every year. So can you tell us about how the American Rescue Plan will help in your efforts?
Yes, Melissa, thank you so much. I will first say that it was an extraordinary honor for our food bank to be the host for this event. And it came with very little warning. And I want to say that our staff and team did an extraordinary job of, along with the Secret Service, of creating a very workable environment, safe and secure, and just did a great job. But the exciting part of this is that, you know, while we don't necessarily know that there's any direct impact to our food bank, we do know that a lot of what's included in the American Rescue Plan provides direct support to the families that we serve. It provides through a variety of assistance programs, as Joyce mentioned, the extension of temporary or the pandemic EBT through September 30th, a temporary 15% increase in SNAP benefits. These are dollars that go directly to the families that we're serving. You know, all of us in the food banking business would love nothing more than to be put out of business. And when we empower families to provide for themselves, to make those choices that are culturally and nutritionally appropriate for themselves, we are shortening the lines, and that is our objective. So we are very excited about a lot of what's in this plan. Not that we fully understand all of it, but we do know that some of these have very immediate and significant impact on the people that we're serving.
Now, Joyce Morgan, if I might, let's talk about the other portion of the VP's visit. She stopped by the FEMA vaccination site at the Gateway Town Center yesterday. And, of course, as I mentioned, now anyone 50 and older in Florida is eligible to be vaccinated. Some cities are leaping ahead of state regulations. Orlando, for example, Miami, they're starting to vaccinate everyone 40 and older. Do you think Jacksonville should do the same?
I think Jacksonville is on a good course where we are. I think that what's happened as far as people who are under the age getting vaccinated, a lot of people are going to sites after the prescribed time that it ends and trying to get any leftovers. Because once a vial is open, then they certainly want to use every ounce that's in that vial. Do we need to jump ahead? I'm not so sure that you absolutely need to. Maybe in a place like Orlando, it may be better because you have big attractions there, like Disney World, like Epcot, you know, Universal. you have so many big attractions that are trying to open. So it may be for them, you know, they're looking at a different kind of clientele than we have here in Jacksonville. Like I said, I think we just need to stay on the course and make sure that everyone who is in that category gets vaccinated. Because remember, Melissa, right now, we're still not vaccinating to our potential. Even at Gateway, they're still not vaccinating to the capacity that has been allowed them.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering if we lower the age even more, we might see more people going in.
Yes and no. You also have to understand that there are still so many people out there, even though we're talking about it, even though we're encouraging people to go on and get vaccinated, there are still people who don't quite believe they're ready for it yet. And, you know, it's been difficult because we as individuals who want to get vaccinated and have been vaccinated, we can't make rash judgments on other people who are still waiting. They, you know, they believe they want more information. You know, for me, I've got the information. I did it. I'm going to have my second dose of the Pfizer vaccine on Friday. Mm. But it's been so difficult to just say, you need to go do this. You know, look at the statistics, look at the numbers, and there's a reason we should do this. Herd immunity is real, and we need to get there.
Let's go to your calls now, 549-2937. Ira on the South Side. Hey, Ira, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for this important show. I don't understand how the city prepared for the vice president's visit. We have you, Melissa, as a treasurer. Could we not have arranged a 30-minute call with you and the vice president?
Yeah, I wish.
The important part of the question, Melissa, is I understand her making personal appearances at the two sites, but it seems to me you're a bigger platform, and we could have put a more informed message out to the public.
Well, Ira, you know what? I really appreciate that. We did make the request to get a one-on-one with Vice President Harris. We didn't get one. A couple of other reporters in the city did get very brief opportunities to do that, but we were not chosen. So you'll have to take it up with the comms team for VP Harris. 549-2937, Susan King, Gail King. Why did I have the name Gail King in my head? I don't know. Susan King. Can you talk a little bit about how the pandemic has exacerbated food insecurity? Because there are two narratives going here. The pandemic, the rapidly increasing pace of vaccinations, but at the same time, a recession, higher unemployment, many more people struggling to get the basics for themselves and their families. And you have seen this up close for a year now. So can you talk about what the last year has been like for this community, as opposed to what you had been dealing with before the pandemic began?
Absolutely. So in 2019, distributed probably close to 17 million pounds of food, and we did 32 million pounds in 2020. We saw 129% increase in the number of people that we served over that period of time. It was really an extraordinary moment when we saw those empty grocery shelves. Personally, those were what our trucks were bringing back to our warehouse, because we deal primarily in recovery food through our grocery partners, retail and wholesale partners. So there's been a lot of pivoting, trying to meet this demand and figure out where it is and how long it's going to last as it went into a full year and continues to this day. You know, the people that we serve are primarily people who live paycheck to paycheck. And when there's a disruption in that cycle, when there's a loss of hours or a loss of employment for a period of time, possibly resulting in a loss of housing or a vehicle, those are things that take a long time to overcome. Long beyond a recovery that starts to improve, you know, there's not a savings account from which to draw upon to suddenly change your situation. So after 2008, we saw the same thing, that the need trailed, you know, for several years to come. And we're seeing the same thing here. Even as people start to go back to work, they're not economically stable enough to not need some assistance. So when we see, you know, the help that's coming through the American Rescue Act, even on a temporary basis, you know, it creates such optimism that we can help these families get back to where they were. We, as an organization, you know, are looking at this continuing through 2021, this really enhanced need, and are preparing for that.
549-2937, Felicia in Jacksonville Beach. Hi, Felicia. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a really simple question. What is happening to the vaccines that are left over at the end of the day? Because on the radio, I heard that we were throwing away extra. So if we reduce the age to anyone who wants to come in, then we would not be wasting any vaccines.
Thank you, Felicia. Yeah. You know, Joyce Morgan, it's my understanding when we talk to the folks at the state and federal vaccination sites that they aren't throwing away any doses. Now, that said, there's a huge mismatch between the capacity they have to vaccinate and the current demand.
Correct. When I went to Gateway for my vaccination, I will tell you, I started at Edward Waters College. They had closed down for the day, and they didn't have any leftover. So when I went to Gateway, there were actually people coming in, because it was kind of late in the day, there were actually people coming in to try to get vaccinated. And so I actually talked to the commander who was there on the scene, trying to ask the exact same question, because I had heard that vaccine was being wasted. And so he explained to me how he does this and how he watches how people are coming in before they open vials. So he was saying that no, and he is not wasting. He is basing it on how many people are actually coming through there and, you know, getting checked in. And so he said to me, we're not wasting. He said, please dispel that rumor that we're out there wasting vaccine. We are not. So again, there are many ways that we can handle it. And I wholeheartedly support dropping the age, but I'm not going to say when that has to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe it's going to happen, and I believe it's going to happen very quickly. In fact, I believe by next week they're going to start lowering it again. So,
sure.
You know, just my thought. I don't know if that's really going to happen, but
it's obvious. Sure, that's the direction it's going. Here's an email,
yes,
Councilmember Morgan, from a listener. He says, I know some people in the health profession aren't taking the vaccine. They say they're waiting to see if there are any side effects, but they'll get it eventually unless herd immunity arrives. So vaccine
Correct.
Hesitancy is a real thing, and including among healthcare workers. Can you speak to that?
I cannot. I only know what I've seen. And I did a Zoom call last week with healthcare professionals, African-American healthcare professionals, in fact, and the Jacksonville Urban League, which my husband, Richard Danford, heads up. But they were talking about what we're talking about this morning, encouraging people to get the vaccine and not wait and not be afraid. So you're getting it from both sides, and I believe that everybody has their own take on this. And so, again, that's where I get to the point where, you know, I wish you would take the vaccination, but who am I to say and look into your situation and make you a villain because you haven't taken the vaccination? I just wish everyone would, because I think it's going to make our nation safer in the end.
This is a little off topic, Joyce, but you mentioned your husband, Richard Danford, who heads up the city's Urban League. We've heard around town he's going to run for mayor in a couple of years. Is that true?
Yeah, I've heard that one too.
Well, can you confirm it?
Sorry, guys. I can't confirm or deny that. I heard that he said it on his radio show. He does a radio show. And I heard he said that too. But, you know, at home, he is not really saying that I'm definitely going to run for mayor. You know, so.
Has he set up a fundraising committee of any kind?
No, he does not. I do know that. He does not have a committee of any kind.
All right. Let's take a few more calls as we talk about Vice President Kamala Harris's visit to Jacksonville yesterday. 549-2937, Noel in Jacksonville. Hi, Noel.
Hi, Melissa. It's Noel.
Noel. Hi, Noel.
It's all good. I had a quick question. Have we really been pushing towards getting, like, frontline workers, like in grocery stores, taken care of for the shots? And how is that process?
Yeah, you know, unless they're 50 and older, they haven't been eligible, which has been criticized, we need to point out, because this state has had the policy of seniors first, of course. Susan King, I know that you're on the line to talk about food insecurity, but let's talk about seniors for a minute, because they are at least getting the priority to go to the front of the vaccine line, but they're also vulnerable economically in this pandemic, which is where you come in.
Yes, and thank you for that. There is, you know, there is some funding specifically for senior nutrition included in this American Rescue Act, which was, you know, very heartening for us because we know that one in six seniors in our community is food insecure, something that we've been focusing on for the last couple of months, trying to bring awareness to this fact. One of the things that we saw during the pandemic was that, you know, that there's this this very almost forgotten population of low-income seniors that live in these subsidized housing facilities. And, you know, we're suddenly forced to be inside and people not allowed into the buildings and congregate feeding shut down. And so we ended up providing over 650,000 restaurant-prepared meals to these very housing facilities over the course of this past year and during the pandemic. You know, it's so easy to forget forget seniors that you don't see and hear. It's wonderful that now we are seeing higher vaccination rates for the seniors. And but I share Joyce's sentiment that, you know, it'll be good when we can just get everybody vaccinated. On the topic of frontline workers, I will say that our food bank has been out on the front lines the entire time,
mm-hmm.
and at mass distributions, which have increased, you know, 400% since this started, and then they are not yet able to technically be considered a qualified group, but we have had some success in those end of the day kind of leftover vaccines, kind of one off, but the hesitancy rate amongst even our employees who are frontline has been higher than I would ever have imagined. We see the same thing in the communities where we're doing food distributions. So it's a little confusing, you know, for those of us who are so pro vaccination to try to understand why some aren't, but we have to make vaccines available to everybody who wants it as quickly as possible.
Well, thank you both so much. Susan King, CEO of Feeding Northeast Florida, and Councilmember Joyce Morgan. By the way, we're getting some tweets for you, Councilmember Morgan, saying that you are their favorite. Will you run for another office, maybe mayor, state house, or state senate? So you got some fans out there.
Oh, thank you so much. And I do appreciate that. And I just want to do one plug for Dr. Diana Green and the Parks Department for summer lunches that we're doing. And Dr. Green talked about the fact that they kept serving kids even through the pandemic, even through the fact that kids were at home doing virtual learning. So all of that has still been in play, Melissa. And I think that all of those points are just so important to let our constituents know what's going on. So thank you again. We appreciate you.
Thank you, ladies, so much. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, later, how a local coffee company is teaming up with a big fish, Shark Tank's Mark Cuban will tell you about it, but up next.
The biggest problem with this bill, perhaps, is that it does nothing to create jobs, nothing to make us healthier, nothing to build better schools, and nothing to help fix our criminal justice system.
A new anti-protest bill is moving in the legislature, but critics say it violates the First Amendment. We'll be right back.
And good morning. I'm David Luckin, station manager at 89.9, and we want you to give us a call at 353-9528 because we are in this together. We're moving forward together as we get through this pandemic and keep bringing you all the information that you need to get by every day with First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross. So please, if you're a regular listener, give us a call now at 353-9528, or you can go online at wjct.org/donate. And we thank you so much for your support.
Well, it's called an anti-protest bill, but critics of new legislation championed by the governor and some leaders in Tallahassee say it violates the First Amendment. For more, I spoke with Andrew Warren. He's the state attorney for Hillsborough County, Florida. Andrew Warren, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Melissa, it's a pleasure to be back. Thanks so much for having me.
You know, it's fascinating to see that in the legislative session that's going on right now in Tallahassee, an anti-protest bill is the governor and legislative leader's number one priority in the middle of a pandemic. It's House Bill 1. It's billed as an anti-protest bill, but you and some other opponents of this have called it an assault on our democracy. Why is that?
Well, it is an assault on our democracy, but let me go back to the point you just made. I mean, this is the number one priority. It fails to address the urgent needs of our state, economic needs and healthcare needs, and we're facing huge budget issues and educational needs and environmental needs and even criminal justice needs that are far more important than this. The biggest problem with this bill, perhaps, is that it does nothing to create jobs, nothing to make us healthier, nothing to build better schools, and nothing to help fix our criminal justice system.
Well, let's talk about what the bill would do. It's called the Combating Violence, Disorder, and Looting and Law Enforcement Protection Act. Basically, what it is doing, according to the governor and other legislative leaders, is cracking down on violent protest. Yes?
Yes. Well, that's what the bill says it's supposed to do. But the reality is that this bill is a solution in search of a problem. It doesn't actually help prosecutors. We already have the tools we need to prosecute people for rioting and looting and destruction and violence. And I can point to the fact that the one night of widespread violence we had in Tampa of rioting, we're prosecuting people for those crimes. Now, what this bill really does is it enhances some penalties for crimes that are already on the books. It creates some new offenses where we already have laws to address them. It prohibits the release from jail for people until they see a judge, which takes away local court authority to make those decisions. And it really doesn't help prosecutors at all with the difficulty of prosecuting and holding people accountable when they're involved in violent crimes or violent protests. So the difficulty here is not really legal, it's factual. When law enforcement's at a scene of 100 people and three of them do something wrong, the problem that prosecutors and law enforcement face is identifying those three people, who did what. And that's the real issue with the when you have sporadic acts of violence and criminality stemming from a largely peaceful protest. So this bill doesn't address any of those solutions, any solutions to those actual problems. What it does instead is it really pays lip service to public safety with bumper sticker rhetoric that has lots of negative implications because it infringes on our free rights.
Critics of this bill have called it racist. Do you think it's a racist piece of legislation?
I don't think it's racist legislation. I do think that it's going to have a disparate impact on minority communities. I think we've seen from the way that protests have been policed across the country that there is a real concern and a real issue for the perception of what's happening at a protest in terms of who is conducting, you know, who's misbehaving and who's not. And you can look at the difference between how Black Lives Matter and other racial injustice protests were policed versus what happened at the insurrection on January 6th. And so my concern is really not just that this affects our minority communities, but that it tears a couple corners off the Constitution by chilling freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, these rights that we hold sacred as a country. Anytime anyone is doing anything that chips away at those rights, we all need to put our guard up.
Well, now, one thing about this bill that does seem to have a chilling effect on street protest is that if anyone at a protest becomes violent, anyone else who's there would also be facing the same charges that the person who became violent would face. Correct?
That's right. That's right. And that is the crux of the issue that is encroaching on free speech and peaceful assembly. The bill defines the word riot so broadly. So any public disturbance in which three or more people end up doing something bad, and we can all agree what the bad is, it's violent and destructive conduct, but if you have three or more people engaged in that bad conduct, it criminalizes the peaceful protest and the peaceful assembly by everybody else who is there. This is making peaceful protest by the many unlawful based on the conduct of the few.
Mm. Okay, so as we mentioned, this is House Bill 1. You're a prosecutor. If this goes into law, how will that affect your job in Hillsborough County?
Well, it's really not going to affect my job whatsoever because we don't intend to use it. But this is a bill where we have the tools in place already to prosecute people who commit bad crimes. The concern we have is that, as I said, it's a solution in search of a criminal justice problem. It encroaches on those freedoms of speech and assembly. It violates principles of local control, and worst of all, it fails to address the needs of Floridians. So in terms of how my office is going to handle it, we have made very clear that we are going to do everything we can to uphold First Amendment rights of citizens in Hillsborough County, but we're not going to tolerate people who commit acts of violence and destruction, especially under the guise of peaceful protest. So it's not going to change what we're doing here. But in other jurisdictions around the state and potentially around the country, they look at this as a way that it can possibly be a way to criminalize people who are engaged in peaceful protest, and it's going to discourage people from exercising those First Amendment rights.
Is this just political theater on the part of the governor and the legislature?
Unfortunately, it may be. I mean, when you look at the fact that we don't need this bill, it doesn't actually help prosecutors, it doesn't address the issues faced by law enforcement and prosecutors of holding people accountable when they commit crimes at a protest, it stifles free speech, it takes away community control, it doesn't address racial injustice. So why are we doing it? You say political theater. My concern is anytime we are limiting our freedoms in the Constitution, that we're willing to encroach upon those freedoms, and we're not getting a benefit out of it, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And it goes back to the priorities of the needs of Floridians. What are we doing to actually make Floridians better off, healthier, more educated? What are we doing to reform our criminal justice system? This bill just does not address any of those things. It is a head scratcher as to why this has become the priority in Tallahassee.
Andrew Warren, he's the prosecutor in Hillsborough County, state attorney there. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Well, here's some exciting news. A local company is joining forces with a big fish. Yes, Jacksonville-based Civilized Coffee is teaming up with Dallas Mavericks owner and Shark Tank investor Mark Cuban and his company, Three Commas. Together, they'll create a new line of organic Colombian coffee. Mark Patterson is founder and president at Civilized Coffee in Jacksonville, and he's on the line. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. And congratulations to you and your company, Civilized Coffee, getting a real shot of excitement and caffeine, I guess, from Mark Cuban himself. Tell us about this new partnership and what's happening.
Sure. Civilized Coffee, locally in Jacksonville, we've been always looking to expand our sales channel and our growth. We've been working with different influencers and partnerships throughout the country, including Surf Rider and some local partnerships. And right around the end of last year, Mark's Cuban teams reached out to us, and we've been working on this project. And we're excited it launched and really big success. What we are sharing the sales channel, so we're both selling the product. It's co-branded with Civilized Coffee and Three Commas. We source the coffee directly from Colombia. My partner, Jeff Norton, he's an expert coffee roaster, so he really, really did an amazing job with this coffee.
Now, his company, Three Commas, is based on the fact that there are three commas in $1 billion. So this is all about making some money off your coffee.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so I would think having his help will really be a game changer for you. Tell us a little bit about your projections, what you hope to do with this over the next few years.
Sure. So this is our first line of coffee. We've got the whole bean in the ground organic coffee, and then we've also did a decaf. Decaf is what Mark Cuban drinks, so we had to make sure we included that in there. And we are selling it directly through our website, and Three Commas is selling it through their website, and they're also going to put it into Mark Cuban's Amazon companies. So it'll be national distribution. Obviously, we're getting a lot of attention to our company, a lot of attention to Jacksonville, just for the fact knowing that, you know, Mark Cuban's one thing, Three Commas is one thing, but they came to Jacksonville, they came to us. I think that's really a shot in the arm and really mm-hmm. gives us some of that national exposure that we're looking for.
Why do you think they picked you when they could have chosen to help any number of companies around the country this way?
We've just been proving ourselves year over year. Our company has grown 300 to 400% since 2017. We have sold to every state in the country. We have sold to Mexico, Canada, the Caribbean, Europe, the Middle East, military facilities in the Middle East. So we're rapidly growing, and it's all about entrepreneurship and small business. And I think it's just a great collaboration. I mean, what else is Mark Cuban? What else does Three Comma represent? But, you know, determination, focus, success. And we represent that also as we grow.
Now, this is coffee shipped directly to your warehouse on Dennis Street in Jacksonville, where you create small batch roasts. Will, with this new partnership, will you have to expand your local operations?
No, we're really in the right place. We have a 40,000-foot warehouse. My partner, Jeff, imports coffee from all over the world, so we have lots of space. We have several. We have two different roasters. We have a great team, and we can handle the growth easily.
Well, that's exciting. So the coffee is available at your website, civilizedcoffee.com, and also at his website, threecommas.com. Where around town can people also buy the coffee at a brick-and-mortar location, if any?
Not at the moment. We haven't reached out to any wholesale distributors yet. We're looking into that, and we're always, you know, if someone's listening, interested, let us know. You know, we want to build sales and with you too. So please reach out to us.
Sure, because I mean, people, I think more than ever now are interested in supporting locally produced foods and goods, artisanal products like yours. That is just more and more important, and you're riding that wave. Yes.
Agreed, absolutely. And with COVID and people not wanting to go out as much to whether it's coffee shops or to grocery stores, we're right here. We can have it. We ship. We roast coffee every week. We ship every single day. So we can have it to you within 24 or 48 hours.
So again, if you'd like to enjoy some locally roasted coffee that is a company growing by leaps and bounds, go to Mark's website. It's civilizedcoffee.com. As they team up with Mark Cuban of the Dallas Mavericks and Shark Tank to create a new line of coffees. By the way, why is it called Civilized Coffee, Mark?
Great question. it's all about civilized conversation. And when we were creating this company, we wanted to create something more than just a coffee company. And we really feel that coffee brings people together, whether it's family or friends or business people. And with the way things were going in this world, we really thought it was time to bring back civilized conversation. I just read a book called Crucial Conversations, and my partner, Jeff, when he travels the world and talks to farmers and co-ops throughout the coffee world, it's about having a civilized conversation. It's just there's more to life than go, go, go. And so that's where we came up with the civilized part and believe that it's really important to our brand.
Excellent. Check it out at civilizedcoffee.com. He's founder and president, Mark Patterson. Congrats, Mark.
Thank you so much for your time. Have a great day.
And if public radio has gotten you through this last year, we can't thank you enough. Your support means the world to us. Station manager David Luckin is here now to talk about that. Hey, David.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. 353-9528. Excellent program as usual. And that's why people tune in every morning. And that's why they should give us a call, because you manage to keep us well informed every day. How do you do it, Melissa?
Lots of coffee.
yeah, civilized coffee.
I'm going to have to buy some civilized coffee, I think, now. Oh. You know, my Javelia is very important to me, but I'm going to have to try civilized coffee, David.
There you go. Coffee, Josh, Heather, and Melissa every morning.
That's
bringing
right.
You what's important. So give us a call, 353-9528. We're going to actually do this drive in earnest Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So we're just sneaking in now to try and pad the pot a little bit before we really ask you. So if you want to join us now, give us a call, 353-9528. And we thank you so much for your support. It is so important.
That's right. You know, it's been such a challenging year for everyone. One silver lining for us here at WJCT is that we are seeing record ratings for this radio station and the content we provide. And we hear every day from our listeners and the community out there how much WJCT means to them, radio, TV, and digital. And so we're here every day as a public service here at this nonprofit organization, bringing you information you need, health information, economic information, arts and culture, you name it, we're here to provide it. So as David said, give us a call with your support if you're a regular listener. Call us up at 353-9528.
Okay, I'll take the last bit there, Melissa. We can't see each other today.
I know,
this isn't
you're in
as
the
much
other studio.
Fun as yesterday. Hey, give us a call at 353-9528. We thank you so much, and you give us a call, and we will keep bringing you a great program every day. Thanks, Melissa, for making time for us, and thank the callers for giving us a call at 353-9528 or anytime at all at wjct.org/donate, or you can do it the old-fashioned way. Just send us a check, 353-9528. Even though we turn the page to a new year, many challenges are still with us as we begin 2021. WJCT News 89.9 will continue to be here for you, bringing you the information and understanding you need to take those challenges on. Help WJCT News 89.9 meet those challenges with your donation of support today. It's easy and makes all you hear on WJCT News 89.9 possible. Call now, 353-9528.
Getting back to the office could be tricky as employers consider vaccine policies for their workers.
Right now, our research shows that more employers are actually encouraging it rather than requiring it.
I'm Molly Wood. Will the workplace ever get back to normal? Next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, the director and co-director of the film Soul, which is nominated for an Oscar for Best Animated Film. We talk with Pete Docter and Kemp Powers, who also co-wrote the film. Powers also has an Oscar nomination for his screenplay One Night in Miami, which he adapted from his play of the same name. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Forty-five states and the District of Columbia have passed hate crime laws. It's been a federal offense since 1968, but local law enforcement in Atlanta say they still have not found evidence to build such a case against the alleged spa attacker. What is a hate crime? And can the law provide justice for those who are increasingly under attack? Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. A new play presented by FSCJ DramaWorks captures this time of pandemic. It's called A World Distanced. I spoke with writer and professor Tim Gilmore, show director Ken McCullough, and performers Autumn Franks and Ellen Mellon.
Hi, everybody. Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Good to have you on. What a timely project. Tim Gilmore, let's begin with you. Tell us about A World Distanced.
So for me, it kind of came as a surprise. Ken gave me a call and right around Christmas, I don't remember exactly when it was, and said, hey, we've got this upcoming project, and asked me to write some short pieces for it. I thought they would be more like poems originally. I think that's what Ken had in mind. But I talked to several people with very different kinds of experiences with COVID and shaped my interviews with them into a series of monologues. So there are 11, we're calling them COVID monologues. And that's one facet of the show. I'm sure Ken can fill us in on the big picture, but the monologues are a minute to a minute and a half. And there's also music and a number of other pieces to it. It's a pretty multifaceted, exciting thing.
Yeah. So let's talk to our director, Ken McCullough. There are lots of facets, as Tim said, to this production. Anyone who's had COVID touch their life will find themselves represented in this show. Yes.
Yes. And it is, I guess, primarily music, primarily pieces from musical theater, kind of the scope of musical theater, along with Tim's monologues. And there's also dance in it. So I just wanted it to be kind of a multidisciplinary work that deals with this, how our lives have been changed by this and probably maybe changed for the rest of many of our lifetimes. When it comes to just how the impact that this has had on us. I wanted to make sure as a kind of a musical review of this, that it wasn't going to be just about the virus itself or necessarily just the statistics, but really how our relationships have been changed. Some of it is humorous. Some of it is ironic. Some of it is about loss, but not all about loss, just because we see that all the time. And I wanted this to be kind of the spectrum of this very complex thing that has happened to our world.
Absolutely right. Let's talk to our cast members, Autumn Franks and Ellen Mellon. Autumn, let's begin with you. What's it like to be part of this production? And tell us about your part.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just so happy to be doing theater again.
Yeah, sure.
Doing something that brings joy in this crazy time. All of us are ensemble members in this piece. We don't necessarily have like one character that we are. So I'm in a multiple of pieces. I have one of Tim's monologues and then I have a song, and I really think both of them define complete opposite sides of the spectrum from COVID. My monologue that I'm doing for Tim is this teacher who's been trying to teach this time, and she's talking about this student who she's been through the worst of it with COVID. And I myself am a substitute teacher and I work with children all the time. So this monologue means a lot to me because I've seen the same struggle in my students. And it's something that it really touched me in that way. And I love that piece. And then my song is complete opposite side of the spectrum with this lady who is, she's so over it. She's just going to tap and dance her troubles away. She's going to have a drink. And she's just realizing that this is all too much and she's just going to have joy in this time of sorrow. And I love all the pieces in the show and how they show the joy and the sorrow, because like Ken had said, there's been so much sadness. We need to look at the brighter sides of life and of things.
Alan Melton, how about yourself? What's it like to be back on stage?
Okay, first of all, I want to commend Autumn for working on those lyrics. That was funny. I would say that this is arguably like one of the most triumphant pieces that I have done in theater. And it's really interesting because like I sing, so there's no monologues for me, but I've never had a piece that showed like so much range before. I mean, like I have more somber, more sad songs about, you know, love and loss. And then I'm a disgruntled delivery boy, you know, worried about a job that's overworking me. It's really interesting to be a part of a piece that like lets me play so many different emotions like within the same time frame.
Yeah. Okay. So with all of that said, Tim Gilmore, this is one night only or one afternoon only. Coming up Sunday, March 28th at the Wilson Center for the Arts, FSCJ South Campus. Of course, you're going to have everybody masked and distanced when they come to see the show. Yep.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, hopefully soon we'll be able to open things up and have regular events again. But right now, this seems like the best way to do this conscientiously and responsibly.
So come on out and see.
And Melissa, the
theater. Go ahead, Ken.
The theater is going to be just at about 25% capacity.
Okay, so get your tickets now. Get your tickets now. One show only, A World Distanced. It's FSCJ's coronavirus theatrical project. Sunday, March 28th, 3 o'clock at the Wilson Center for the Arts. Tickets at Eventbrite. Thank you all, Tim Gilmore, Ken McCullough, Autumn Franks, and Alan Melton for joining us.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.